Hello and welcome to the panel. We're going to look at what we can learn from Maltese experience of creating a blockchain island. And I would like to start with a pretty obvious question. So why Malta is the blockchain island? Where does it come from?
So let me start. It's a pleasure being here from Malta, blockchain island in London. Well, why is Malta a blockchain island?
Yes.
I think the term stuck because we were the one of the first who actually, besides believing in the technology, we did something to embrace, to embrace its potential. And we decided to tap into this particular niche holistically. So we created a framework which caters for the technology itself and for the cryptos as well. Mm-hmm. So from that angle, I think we were perceived as being a little bit avant-garde and very pro-blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So that's why Malta is dubbed as the blockchain island.
Mm-hmm. And if I may add to that as well, I personally think that this wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the political will and the mandate from the government to move towards that direction. I mean, the Prime Minister of Malta went on record early on last year saying we want to become the trailblazers in this new industry. And once you have support from like the top of the food chain, it does help quite a lot for technologists like myself, for legal experts like Dr. Gauci here to actually come forward with their ideas. And the fact that there was an open door policy receiving all these different ideas, all working towards a common goal to create this framework to regulate technology arrangements and services, starting with DLT, out of which blockchain is an architecture, mm-hmm. but also with a vision to move towards artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things eventually, that helped quite a lot. So we've created more or less a digital innovation movement that was manifested in the creation of the world's first regulated for technology arrangements called the Malta Digital Innovation Authority. And I think this wouldn't have happened if it wasn't a joint effort from the, you know, practitioners and also the public sector and the government. So I think that has worked quite well, and the formula really worked in this case.
I suppose that the biggest motivation to actually attract blockchain businesses and provide them with different tools, like regulatory tools and, I don't know, some ecosystem to grow was first to increase the budget, GDP. Yeah, like there are quite a lot of, like the expectations are quite high. I looked at the blockchain strategy and it expected that by 2027, thanks to this strategy, GDP should kind of increase by 10%. That's huge amount.
In Malta, we're a small country. Our resources are minimal, but we pride ourselves of our services industry and also our motivation, will, and also brains to offer certain services and to offer them properly within a regulated environment. So the vision to actually utilize this new sector in order to increase our overall or stimulate economic growth through innovation is actually something that's helped us quite a lot set the parameters from an early stage. So we wanted to look at this as a growth industry. We understand that this is the future and we needed to, you know, plant the right seeds for them to come to fruition when the time is right. And there's no better way to do it other than regulating this space. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, I'm a technologist, so we really are not big fans of the word regulation in general, because you think that you know, innovation is being stifled, you're being shackled, but at the same time we have to be responsible. We have to understand that as a new emerging technology, this can be used for the overall good of everyone, but also a lot of bad can happen through the implementation of this technology. So we needed to regulate it in order to safeguard our economy, but at the same time ensure consumer protection and also investor protection in that space. But from a legal standpoint, I'm sure Dr. Ian here has something to add.
Actually, more than from the legal point of view, as Abdallah mentioned before, we're actually tapping into technology more than the GDP. It's true. It was a target. We had gaming before. We had maritime. Malta is a small country, but both of us were pretty much involved in drafting and even in the policy orientation. More than that, we wanted to create stability. So we needed market stability. By having market stability, you're imbuing as well financial stability, particularly when you're speaking about cryptos, which was the wild, wild west. So in that case, we wanted to make sure that there was no asymmetrical inference. There was no asymmetrical information. We wanted to make sure as well that the consumer, the investors, the users, the adopters in the particular technologies feel safe. That money, the governments put its money where its mouth is by implementing a policy. So that is as far as the crypto side was involved, because there we regulated, and we regulated heavily. And we started regulating by, yes, protecting the consumer, the investor, but by establishing what should be regulated. So what is a virtual financial asset? What is a cryptocurrency which should be regulated? Otherwise, you're going to have a security, you're going to have a financial asset, you're going to have the SEC dictating something. You have to have BaFin saying that Bitcoin is always a security. We said, listen, let's create a test. Let's establish something which is cast in stone, based on MiFID, based on the money, based on the Payment Services Directive. And we start from there. We're not reinventing the wheel. So we're creating a little bit more transparency, certainty. And that is regulated. Then, given that the cryptocurrencies owe their origin as a derivative element from DLT, we said, listen, we're doing this to protect the technology. Because if there is a backlash, blockchain, DLT, which is the mother technology, will be affected. So that can hamper the innovation itself. So we need to make sure that we need to do something as well for the technology or the science, because here we're speaking about code. Blockchain is code, DLT is code, it's software, it's an algorithm. So as Abdallah stated before, we were the first country to dedicate an authority specifically for that. We were the first country to dedicate a regime which is not mandatory like in the cryptocurrency sphere, but it is voluntary. So there we are creating certification criteria, certification parameter. We're creating as well roles, system administrators, technology system auditors, technology administrators to cover for specific functions. So we are sort of streamlining functions to make sure that from that particular point of view, even though voluntary, code is safe for use. If you have a blueprint, you make sure that that blueprint is certified by an authority. And I would say, and here it's much more Abdallah's remit, that even from the technological point of view, this is something quite innovative. We're raising the bar here. So it's not only about GDP. I think Malta had a vision. Yes, there's the political element, there's GDP as well. It needed to be fruitful even from the economical point of view. But as Abdallah said before, I think we need to chapeau for government, for people like the Prime Minister and as well Silvio Schembri, who believed in technology, who believed in the people who were advising him, because this is very, very important. We had lawyers, we had academics, we had people from the industry, we had people coming from the public service. It was a very nice mixture. And all together, there was a team effort, and this is what brought the blockchain island now to fruition.
I also like another thing that I noticed from the blockchain strategy is that it's very well thought through in terms of the pillars. The first pillar I figure out is, of course, regulation. So you offer a very interesting, complex regulatory framework. Another one is research and development. So you're actually going to grow the centers of excellence around technologies. And another one is actual application. So that's what we discussed just a few hours ago, that the best way to actually proceed with regulation is through collaboration, first thing, and second, use cases. Otherwise, what do you regulate? So could you please comment on those pillars? How did they come up?
Should I? Go ahead.
So let's start with the fact that we are not regulating blockchain. We are pushing a regime which will make sure that it's like when you create a code and you start self-regulating, that through a voluntary push, because it's the industry which will push here, blockchain, speaking about the technology is apt and safe for use. And that's a first. So there we're not regulating. We're not regulating the technology. Okay? we regulate on the other side. But here, yes, we, I think we're one of the first countries as well, even before the inception of the framework, who started adopting blockchain technology, block certs, certificates on blockchain. Mm-hmm. The first pilot was done in Malta. Is it enough? No, we need to do much more. So even from the academia point of view, and both myself and Abdallah teach at university and are members in the DLT board, I think we can disclose it. We're going to have quite a unique masters as well. And coming from a small island like Malta, this is quite an event. We are going to create a master's which has three different cross sections. So this master's will be part legal, part computer science, and the other part entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. All the three elements together will be a blockchain master's, because we're seeing that, that there is as well a divergence, a mesh of different sectors. So we need to create as well people trained, and this is quite a feat because we're a small country, mm-hmm. to cater for this new avenue. And that is something which will start next year. Other applications right now, and Abdallah can amplify, we're looking at health, particularly a health exchange, okay? Health is very important, and blockchain can be quite beneficial for health. Transport, okay? Mm-hmm. Education, we have certificates. There's more which can be done. Mm-hmm. So right now, I think the push which is going to be on further adoption on the public and even the private sector. Mm-hmm. Because even the private sector, particularly when you have smart contracts then with blockchain, there is a lot of potential, which is still untapped. Mm-hmm.
But at least one of the first applications, at least put that were put in the strategy, were related to e-residency. Yeah, then all sorts of registries, so you could collect taxes and collect fees, then have some public services, registries put on blockchain. That makes sense, quite a lot
that
of sense.
That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was something which even Estonia tried in previous. Mm. Now, e-residency is tied as well with the principle of, to a certain extent, it ties in with the principle of self-sovereignty. If you have a residency, if you have an identity which is imbued directly on blockchain, okay, and that identity is something which is ascertained, then anything which touches on blockchain, the whole ecosystem, even from a data protection point of view, that is something which can culminate in a lot of potential. So yes, that is the starting point. Mm. But I think we need much more work to bring it to fruition. But yes, mm-hmm. even that's for bank, that is for the public sector. If in the future we're going to have the land registries all on blockchain, yes, that is the starting point. When you empower the individual, and you empower the individual initially by giving him an identity. An identity which to a certain extent can carry other information with it which he can hash. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent you don't need to replicate that information every time, for example, if you're getting particular services with a bank, with a financial institution, with a government office. So yes, that is the starting point. Mm-hmm. But I think Abdallah can amplify more on this.
What do you think should be the first use cases actually kind of patronized by the government?
No, so like Ian has said very well, I personally believe that major disruption in the blockchain space in general is going to happen on the digital identity management front, because it is undeniable that, you know, even though we've entered the digital age decades ago, mm-hmm. now we've never been empowered to the extent to own our own identity. Identities have been scattered around various systems without any proper ownership by the users who are actually producing the data, mm-hmm. that is a part of their identity. So using a technology like decentralized ledger technology to create digital identity management systems that will help us reveal different attestations of who we are as a person irrespective of the application, that is an incredibly powerful idea, especially when we are trying to reveal different attestations where to access our medical record, because these medical records are owned by us, to access our educational certificates, because mm-hmm. these are also owned by us, the revealing our financial transactions, because we need to obviously pay our taxes to the tax department, and so on and so forth. So disruption on the identity front is incredibly crucial, And I think that is one of the most important applications from a governmental standpoint to actually move towards. And obviously this is a part of the applications pillar. You mentioned also the R&D part, you mentioned obviously the regulatory part, but you know, it is a joint effort between the public and obviously the private sector. And to show you how much this is stimulating growth even on the private sector, for example, myself and Ian here are, you know, experts in our respective fields, but because of this framework and the ecosystem that's developing, we decided to come together and join our efforts to create one proposition under which we can offer legal services, we can offer R&D, and we can offer software development applications. And we've called it the Kaleido Group. And the Kaleido Group is one of the first entities in Malta now that's giving a holistic 360 degree kind of service proposition that's servicing the legal side, servicing the virtual financial assets, performing the system auditing that's also required by the new authority, but also performing research and development on for various entities, various public and also private entities, and developing software and building applications, some of which we've touched on, but obviously because of certain limitations, I cannot disclose which projects they are yet. But a year and a half ago, we wouldn't have imagined that. Just because we have created the regulatory framework, we now are witnessing not only growth in the sector, but we're collaborations like mine and Ian under the Kaleido Group are happening and are becoming reality just because the market is there for them. And obviously, like I said in the very beginning, the seeds for that ecosystem were planted already. Mm-hmm. So I think next year is going to be very interesting for Malta in general, and also for us as a group as well.
Okay, so basically what we can see now, there is a certain foundation, like kind of logical foundation, regulatory foundation, Malta. Second, there is a kind of this new trend of collaborations, and I guess what you need to do next is to attract more companies, to Malta. And it's highly competitive space. Everyone needs blockchain talents and backed by big money companies, so to say. But you've done a great job with Binance, for example, and there are other crypto exchanges that come into Malta. So could you please comment on that? What's your strategy maybe in attracting the talents?
So this is very, very, very spot on what you just said. And to be honest with you, it is a part of the whole process. One of the reasons why we're calling it an ecosystem is for any ecosystem to thrive, obviously you need the talent to gravitate towards that ecosystem. You need the projects to gravitate towards that ecosystem, and obviously the capital to go and gravitate towards it. The only way to do that is to create legal certainty and regulatory certainty. These big companies that you've mentioned, they wouldn't have considered Malta if they were not provided with some form of regulatory certainty. In fact, there's been a lot of talks about massive investments in the crypto space last year and the year before the bear market that we're witnessing. But in Malta, as soon as we announced the regulatory framework in Malta, we're witnessing a different, you know, kind of interest from institutional investors who are saying now, okay, now that this space has been regulated, we're ready to invest in it. Institutional investors that have not, you know, touched any ICOs before, they have not touched any form of investment in this space because it was completely unregulated, and according to many of them, it was a wild, wild west kind of structure. Okay. But as soon as Malta provided them with the legal certainty and the regulatory framework, I think not a single week passes where we don't meet with some of these institutional investors that have come to Malta. So yes, regulatory certainty causes, you know, talent projects, but most importantly, capital to gravitate towards that. And obviously, these projects need the capital to operate.
Mm-hmm. I have little to add, but I want to correct a misnomer. People in this sphere, and I've been in this sphere for the past 4 or 5 years. I'm a policy advisor on regulations, so I'm a lawyer. A lot of the clients I meet, even when we're speaking abroad, they tell us, but you want to regulate in an area where people don't want to be regulated. This is not true. This is absolutely not true. People, investors, want to be regulated. They want to be regulated because they want to foster their business. They want to have legal certainty.
they want to be associated with a country of repute. And I will emphasize on repute. Because you mentioned Binance, you mentioned a lot of big names. To a certain extent, we are overwhelmed in having Binance, Okinix, all these big households are in Malta. They showed interest in Malta. But when we were drafting our legislation, when we were drafting the policy, even now that we're drafting the rules, our main intent was not catering for these big companies, but catering for our repute. So our legislative structure, particularly on the cryptocurrency side, is very robust and very onerous. We anticipated even the 6th AML. Now we have the 6th AML. We have crypto to crypto, which is going to be regulated. You're going to be a subject person. In our rules, okay, and this was earlier this year, we anticipated that crypto to crypto, so fiat to crypto, crypto to fiat, and crypto to crypto, we captured it even under AML. So even that was captured under the rules, even that was, to a certain extent, somebody who's providing that was already captured as a subject person. We regulated as well this sphere to give certainty as well from the data protection point of view. So GDPR, something which applies across the board. Because if you have a company and they're not regulated, but they still need to comply with AML obligations on a risk-based approach, and they need to profile, so an automated decision-making, unless there is a legal obligation or requirement, there, even from the GDPR point of view, they'd be exposed. So that's why these people wanted a stern, a robust regulation. They wanted to be associated with something which they could use to invest further. But it's not only them, even the consumers, even the users. If you see, for example, the recent case in America on Bitcoin Cash, yes, it's decentralized, it's blockchain. Where did they take the redress? In court. So we're working, these operators, this technology, these new services, these new crypto structures are working in an existing legal regime. And we need to make avail of that. And that is what we did. We tried to create certainty. So this is a misnomer, saying that they wanted to be regulated. They wanted certainty, and that is exactly what we provided. And through this certainty, yes, we're attracting a lot of companies. Big companies, small companies, medium companies. Will they all make it in the licensing regime? Could be yes, could be no. But it's not only because of the lack of capital. It could be because they would not be prone to, for example, the type of regulation which we're mandating, which is not going to be light touch, particularly on the crypto point of view.
Okay, I think I have to bring a little bit sensitive topic here. There is one thing that blockchain and Malta have in common, and this is money laundering accusations, so to say. And just as we also need to kind of touch upon what UK can learn from Malta experience, I'll just like briefly read you a comment from Bloomberg, which says, the union's least populous member nation has become a cryptocurrency and online gambling hub plagued by allegations of corruption and money laundering, and it's selling passports. So this is how you were advertised in the UK. So how could you respond to this kind of opinion?
I will. Well, we are in London, we're in the UK. Even the UK was struck down with allegations that there were shell companies siphoning billions. We tend to look at the bigger picture. We had Estonia as well being hampered now with Dunkelspiel, which same thing, billions. Germany, I mean, Deutsche Bank, billions. So okay, we had Malta, not billions. The Italians have a saying, tutto il mondo un bel paese. Yes, there are problems. I think we are a small country. We are endorsing that problems. I think they are being magnified beyond proportion. We know that there are problems, they are being tackled, they will be tackled. And I take you back to what I said before. This substance in what we are saying lies in what we put in the regulation. Not in allegations, okay? Not in certain sweeping statements. I would suggest that people read our regulations and they criticize us on those regulations. Or when we fail to adhere to our supervisory requirements. There, I would say that in that case, if we are proven wrong, we will sit down, we will think, and we will lament. But we are cognizant of the fact that repute for us And I said it before, yeah. Before you even asked that question, repute for us is very, very important. Yeah. Not only because it's Malta, but it's because we are a member of the European, member of the EU. And that for us carries weight.
If I may add to that, it's sometimes when I read such yeah. articles, I find them to be incredibly absurd because certain outlets have not even looked at the effort that has been put to draft regulations. But the most important thing, the fact that we are literally the first country in the world to sit and decide to regulate the space, to make sure that we're ensuring transparency, to make sure that we're eliminating any form of fraud that can happen in that sector, to make sure that everything is regulated with the VFA, is regulated under our Financial Services Authority, which is a part obviously of the regulatory kind of regimes in a whole union, European Union. It says a lot about Malta's approach. So I'll be very blunt when I say, I mean, unfortunately, because of our size, we literally tend to get bullied, you know, by media outlets that, you know, usually cover you know, certain parts of the world with a certain approach. However, the same media outlet that you've quoted, they've published a lot of positive articles about Malta. The same media outlet actually covered Delta Summit in Malta, which was Malta's official blockchain event that happened this year in October, with more than 4,000 delegates, more than 350 companies, and they were the main media partner, and the amount of positivity that surrounded their coverage for the event was quite overwhelming. So even though every journalist is entitled to their own opinion, I genuinely do invite them to, like Dr. Ian said, to look at what was done in Malta instead of just, you know, following some form of sensationalism that will get people to read mm-hmm. without any valid substance, mm-hmm. Just because Malta is a small country. And as I said, if you look at bigger countries, like in London, almost every other month there is a massive scandal. No one accuses London of being a money laundering hub. Far yeah. from that, because yeah. the sector is very heavily regulated. We also have our regulations as well. So it's quite unfortunate to have such labels, but I do invite everyone to look beyond them and to actually seek the truth, especially in an era of misinformation and fake news. Mm. Everyone should do their own research.
Mm-hmm. We have to wrap up, so probably you can just conclude with one tip to the UK, like about your experience with blockchain and setting up the frameworks and stuff like that. Just one tip.
I will, but I will say something, 1 minute.
Okay.
Let's remember that we at least had the guts to regulate where others were afraid of regulating. So if Malta did not regulate, because we're speaking about money laundering, we're speaking about abuse on consumer rights, I mean, this thing would still have subsisted and these entities would not be regulated. So at least there we are intervening, and we are intervening with a concrete legal position. Mm-hmm. Now, our experience, I think that the UK had already touched upon DLT way back in 2014-2015. Very elaborate analysis. I mean, I had read it, very interesting as usual, top notch. The UK can learn from our mistakes. The UK can work together with Malta. I think the mistake we did was as well that to a certain extent, we were constrained in working in isolation, Malta only. I hate to repeat myself. This is not something which pertains only to Malta or only to Malta and UK. This is something which has a worldwide reach. So countries need to sit down, they need to learn from each other, they need to collaborate from each other, and they need to embrace this technology. Why? Because at the end of the day, here we're speaking about a trust machine. Here we're speaking about a massive enabler, and it will enable the individual, the society, and by enabling the individual and the society, each particular state will in turn embrace innovation, embrace emancipation. So the UK can, learning from our shortcomings, sit down with people, with countries who have already done a lot of work, who have already, to a certain extent, done mistakes because they were first in adopting certain measures, sit down with them and work on something which brings more value. We could not do that.
Mm-hmm. And if I may add, I mean, Dr. Ian covered it very well, but if I may add one more tip, do listen to the technologists. I mean, we do have a thing or two to add. And Malta, the approach was like, this could potentially be a regulation for engineers by engineers. And having input from the technological standpoint is quite valuable and is quite needed. So I do invite, you know, in an era where we have health tech, we have fintech, we have edutech, everything is technology driven. It would be a shame that the regulation itself is not tech driven. So I invite them to, you know, include the technologists, and we're here to help if we're needed. So
okay, thank you so much. Very insightful. Thank you.